Hello, welcome back to Seeking Scale. Andy, how's it going?
It's been a week. It's been like a few weeks, but it's Wednesday as we're talking right now. And I felt like by Tuesday, I was like, this week will never end. And so, yeah, it's just been one of those times, but I'll try not to do too much complaining, but I think I will have to vent, do like a little mini rant at one point,
though. Okay.
How are things on your end?
Shall we get the mini rant out of the way or?
Yeah, I guess why not?
Let's get it out of the way.
I told you before we have to record that I have to call you out a little bit because I complimented your Starts the Rest of Us interview, but there is like just one horrible lie that you were spreading in it where you said, I recommend Bench to anyone starting out. I do not recommend it to anybody. And they have been the bane of my existence. And it's like, one, just never really being in a business before, I guess, didn't really understand what bookkeeping was and just assumed that when you hire a bookkeeper, you don't really have to do anything. And that was just like wrong. But with Bench, it felt like I was just doing the books because I'd be categorizing half the things and there'd be things that I'd said last month, this is what it is. And it just felt like their guesses, I don't know how they could have built software that is as bad at categorizing it as it is. It almost just feels like people just trolling me by some of the categories they put it in where it'll be like a wire to the business where it says the partner's name in it. And then it'll get assigned to like the wrong partner. It's like, I don't even get how they do that. But yeah, just a ton of issues. And it all came to a head when we were planning to switch regardless because I was having not issues with our accountant, but it was as we're looking at handling sales tax and all the other things, it was like, oh, you should find a tax lawyer to talk to for advice. And it's like, well, like, can you find a tax lawyer and you talk to them and I'll just pay you for it? And like, well, here's some recommendations. I was like, okay, like this, it just was, I was being the operator connecting all the dials and it just felt, well, it was a waste of time. So I was going to switch away from it. And I was like, all right, let's find someone new who can handle books, taxes going forward. And then I'll just finish the books with Bench this year. And that was when all hell broke loose. And I was like digging into it. I was like, oh, they just didn't have my bank information for about 6 months of the year and didn't mention that to me. And then assumed that I was paying payroll because they're connected to Gusto, which was doing our payroll, saw that we were increasing payroll every month, but weren't seeing any Stripe income coming in and also weren't seeing any places where the money was coming from. And so they put all those transactions as a personal loan from me to the company. And then I was like, that's a kind of a wild conclusion to jump to, but okay. So we'll get that straightened out. And then it was just like, I just kept finding more and more things. I'm like, I don't even know how this was the most, like the 17th most logical thing to choose. And so right now they've tried to reconcile things. I'll see how it looks, but most likely we'll just have someone else redo our books for last year and just kind of chalk this one up to an insane amount of wasted time. And there were things that I could have done to stay more on top of it. And this is sort of the frustration that I have with the scale we're at, is that you hire productized services or consultants or whatever to help, but you're project managing them to a pretty high level and like they're not experts either. And so you're trying to like, this doesn't seem right. And then you're doing research to figure out how to categorize that, like telling them how to do their job, if you're staying on top of it. And it just, in the end, I honestly think, well, very confident it would have been faster for me to just, and better to just do my own books. And so like to the calling you out for your complaint, I would at this point, like really, if you have a very, I don't know how to even caveat it. Like I think in most situations, if you have very simple books, do them yourself. If they're more complicated, I still probably do them yourself until you can afford to have like a higher tier of service. But at this point, like I don't even have like huge expectations for the next firm we're working with. I just feel like it'll at least cut down the telephone game of they do multi-state tax analysis as far as Nexus goes and everything else. Like they have that expertise in-house. They do the taxes themselves. They offer the part-time CFO services like and bookkeeping. So it's like, all right, like I'm going to be paying more for it. I'm sure I'm still going to have to do some work, but hopefully it's just a little bit less. And yeah, it just feels like at this stage we're at, I question how much of the services that we sign up for like actually help much.
Yeah. So sorry to hear that you had such a bad experience. And I know you didn't sign up with them because I said so, but, and sorry for everyone who listens to startups, the rest of us, if you sign up for Bench. I mean, we've been Bench customers for a long time, and I definitely hear what you're saying and agree for the most part. I think that there is an element to a lot of this stuff that like, it needs to be good enough. And we've talked about this with other services that we're both evaluating. And like, we're looking at moving to pilot for a bunch of reasons. And we may go there. And I've heard some horror stories from people about them. And I've heard a lot of really good stories. And I think that like, where I am with any of these, and like us hiring a bookkeeper internally, you know, or something would have the same thing, which is they're only good as you empower them and inform them to be, you know, like they might make this knucklehead move like your bookkeeper maybe did, you know, with the bank account and stuff like that. Maybe they wouldn't. I think that we're going through the exact same thing right now with like SEO and content marketing and strategy and stuff like that. We have a writer on the team who's been writing with us for a very long time and he's great. We had an SEO person helping us for a long time and they didn't require any of that oversight. They kind of stopped doing SEO services. And so we're having to find somebody new and it's the exact same thing. It's like, okay, I do this, but then I stop here. You know, and I do this, but then I have to do all the writing. And I'm like, hey, man, I got a great writer. I don't want someone to do the writing or I don't need someone to do the writing. And like, yeah, I agree. Like all these fractional pieces, and they're all that we can afford, right, are challenging because then you're in some ways like a lot more responsible for everything because you're the only glue that can keep these two or three pieces together. I mean, there's been discussions in the Tiny Seed Slack about this and several people have suggested bringing on a full-time like finance person. They can be like, they can do your books, they can do your taxes, and they can be like your part-time CFO.
With the issues that we've had, we're not at like, there's more immediate hires that we would have to make. But if we were to double from here, I don't think that would be a bad idea. I also could see just starting a competing bookkeeping service because it's just again like and I know I'm hating on them a bit and it's I'm sure for the average client they have it's fine and I know we have a bit of a complicated setup where it's we started this business with a fresh LLC that we acquired the assets of another business for brought it into that we had liability to the seller who we guaranteed him a salary and then basically deferred the payments on the asset sale over a couple of years. And so like they didn't handle amazingly, but they did okay with it. And then our accountant cleaned it up and had them update it based on that. And like, there's just like a lot of moving pieces on the financial side for us, but like we haven't really raised money or things like that. So it's not that crazy. I guess what frustrates me is when it's like, this is their job. I don't even blame the individual bookkeeper they assign us. It just seems like I don't get what their value add is. To me, a productized service has to be better than doing it yourself. And what a lot of the other services do, even pilot contractors that you would hire, they're all going to use QuickBooks and they all know how to use it. And then you can go in, export everything. And like, it's a standardized format. Bench built their own platform for it, but it's definitely not as a QuickBooks is the shining example of bookkeeping software, but I think one of the main issues is that they built their own platform for it and their categorization, their algorithms to handle that are just like not good. But the bigger piece is it just seems like when in a service business, you have to be catching when things go wrong. And there were just some like super obvious things that again, hey, you're paying people, but we don't see the, where the money's coming from. It's just like that. That should have been easy.
That like, should have been obvious. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm definitely think about it from a process standpoint, and it's kind of frustrating. And I think it helps us take that similar level of anal retentiveness to our business and just think about like, okay, like what can we do to catch things before the customer does, like, or like, we know when they're struggling, how can we fix this? What are the other things we can do to just remove the friction? Like, how can we really think about that? And I feel like that's what makes a great product, whether it's a service or software or whatever. But it's also just like, it's stressful because I think dealing with all this stuff from bench has put me in that mindset of just like seeing the flaw and just being pissed off about like, this is dumb. Like, why, like, guys, this is sloppy. We should have caught that. Or like, this, why is this working that way? Like, I've just been in this like grumpy old man mindset of just like seeing the flaws in everything. But I'm sure the team has been like, I try not to like have too bad of an attitude and I try to be constructive about it. But like, I definitely have been doing more pushing back recently. Like, oh, but like, why can't we do it that way? Or like, what about this? Like, and just keep digging into it until we figure out a better way of resolving something or presenting it. Or maybe we don't even need to have this feature. We could just make something else work better so this isn't needed. And that's like the balance that I've been walking recently. And I honestly think we've had some really good improvements to the product, at least like in the pipeline, because I've been just pissed off and like stubborn enough to be like, no, like there's got to be a better way than doing this. And not really letting us just be like, ah, like this is good enough. Let's move on to the next thing. And what I've found is that a lot of times in the product planning cycle, when you're trying to figure out like, how does this actually work? How do these things fit together? How will it impact other stuff? There's always like this point where you're just like, ah, like this, like these changes that we're talking about, I get what we're trying to make easier, but this is going to cause that to like, it opens a can of worms and it's just a lot easier to be like, ah, like whatever, we're going to just like try to put them all back in the can and walk away and just like not deal with this now. But the past, this week, really, there's been a few conversations that went very long, but really like we just kept pushing for another hour beyond that. And we're very happy with like, oh, okay. Like we just kept following that trail of, okay, so if we change how this process works because people are jumping around a bit too much and we add the ability to upload the file here, how does it interact with the other screen? And then it's like, okay, that's gonna be weird here. It's like, what can we do there? Just like keep going down that rabbit hole. I feel like eventually you find the rabbit if that's what you want to do. But like that's kind of what I'm trying to look on the bright side a little bit. And I've been happy with where that process has gotten us, but it's also just exhausting because it is just a lot easier. And it's like, no, like this is fine, but I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really important point is like having candor, right? Not just being honest, but like being really open with people about everything, about like your, how you feel and how you feel about them and their performance and this thing and ideating on a feature or a product or whatever. I think it's so important because otherwise, like we talk around in like half truths and general statements and stuff like that. And nobody ever really knows what the hell is going on. And like, that's super unfair. And so, yeah, I agree. I think like we've had a lot of really constructive discussions lately because I've been trying similarly to say, like, say what's on my mind completely. And then we can go from there. Yeah. I think it's really good. I think the other part of that is like, and we've talked about this before, like, I think people want to be led. You know, like our team members want to be led and they want someone to come in and say, this is where the ship's going. Let's figure out how to get there. And to not do that introduces a lot of stress into their lives. Because if you just say like, hey, this is where we're going, all we have to do is figure out how to get there. Then like it takes just a bunch of questions away from them. And I know we're kind of generalizing a lot, but yeah, I think it's an interesting topic.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, we've had the examples on the product side on a few big things that one of the changes we've made recently is it's just been moving around our meeting schedule a bit to make it most effective. And it used to be on Mondays, first thing in the morning, I guess like the leadership team, which is me, Matt, and Ben would have a call and just go over priorities. Then after that, the other calls would happen and support. My call with support was the last one of the day. I was the only one from the leadership team on it. And if issues were brought up, I could like, have and we need to change priorities. It was kind of too late. I could talk to Matt and Ben and it's like, all right, like look, we got to change things. But I was like, this doesn't make sense. So we started having that one first. And Matt is on that because when he wasn't on it, I just felt like I was playing a game of telephone where I was like, I'm pretty sure this is why we made this decision on the technical side. And then I'll try to like relate to Matt what the issues were, but it's like, no, like, let's just have Matt there. And it's been great. The calls definitely go long and we've spent a lot of time just like hashing out these issues, but I think it's going to really improve the points of friction that get brought up again and again to support or to Jordan in office hours and all that things. So like that's been, again, it's been taxing, but we're very confident it's helping us go in the right direction. But even on the marketing side, working with Jordan on just like overhauling our documentation, like our knowledge base, he's probably like sick of me with this, but it's just like we've been, because it's just one of those things where I'm like, all right, like if we're going to do this, it's not saying we need to get this 100% perfect right out of the gate, but I don't want to spend the time on recording all these videos again and doing this if it's just like a half-assed structure. And so we've really figured out like, what do we need to cover? How is this going to work? And just so many of the conversations are easy to just not, you have in your mind like, ooh, like some doubts about it and you just don't vocalize it. And you're like, ooh, like, okay, like, I'm not sure how else we're going to promote this, like, but we'll figure it out later. And then it's just like, well, maybe. And so what we've really been doing is just have to be like, okay, how are people actually getting the knowledge base? Like when they're getting there, what are they looking for? How should it be organized? Are there other places we can surface it for them? Because like, it'd probably be better if they don't have to go digging through the knowledge base to find these answers. And it's one of those things that, yeah, we've gone back and forth a lot with it and are pretty happy with what we've come up. But it's just like, it's not that I have the energy right now to do it, but I'm just like annoyed enough with life that I'm just like, I'm just going to like turn off my filter and just be like, yeah, no, like let's like this. This is like a half solution. Like, let's keep digging into it.
It is kind of like your tolerance, right, for good enough, like goes down in situations like this. And I think we're all just stressed right now, like fucking tax season and Ukraine and all this stuff, like winter, shitty weather. Yeah, I think we're all like feeling a lot of stress right now. And it's nice that it's manifesting itself in some kind of positive way. I think it can go the opposite for a lot of folks.
Yeah. And I think it's just trying to, if we're able to get good results from this, with me being relatively rough around the edges on the method of it, like let's find a balance where we've talked about like managing without being a dick. And I've definitely leaned towards that side these last few weeks. And I want to keep with the results, but just a bit more measured in how I'm delivering that. So there's some good coming out of this.
For me, like the big update, and I don't know if it'll be live by the time this episode is published, but we released a pretty big feature last week, an integration with Stripe to let Stripe be a trigger. Like we have this automations engine inside Castos that's like Zapier, right? So like when this thing happens in, you know, one of several different third-party providers, add or remove people as private subscribers to a private podcast. And Stripe is now one of those. So like somebody pays for the subscription or something like that, is this trigger to add people. And so we've been doing a lot of like product marketing around this. And part of that is going to be changing a lot of like positioning that we're doing. So like haven't nailed down or don't want to say on the podcast exactly the language that we're using on the site, but like it's going to be shifting a lot more towards like, you know, make money as a podcaster instead of like grow your audience and all these kind of more soft endpoint things that we've talked about in the past, just because the product didn't do things to make people money. And now it does. And it's really cool. And so that's really exciting. I mean, you look at some of the other people in these kind of spaces that talk about making money. I think Ghost probably is the best, like ghost.org. Just has like such crystal clear language that talks to like creators, I think. And it's cool for us to be able to enter that crowd because most all podcasting companies just talk about like grow your audience and share your voice and all this kind of stuff, which is like really great. But we're making the like really intentional decision to say like, turn your content into money, you know, essentially. I think Ghost says like, turn your audience into profit or something, which I think is a little unkind sounding, but yeah, I mean, it's generally like kind of the gist. And it's cool because this is the stump that we will stand on for the next several years, right? You think about like DHH and Jason Fried and all this stuff that they just say over and over and over and over. And like, this is what we're going to be saying over and over and over is like, podcast ads suck. The technology sucks. The targeting is terrible. It's a holdover from terrestrial radio. If you want to make money as a podcaster, the only way to do it is through direct listener support. And so this is our soapbox.
And I think it makes a ton of sense from planting that flag in the private podcast. Like, that's where you guys want to go. How have you thought about it from basically balancing where you want to go versus where you are? Because it's finding that there's a trend towards private podcasting, which, if I were to guess, right now is heavily enterprise based, as far as revenue goes. Compared, it's not as mass market on the consumer side. And so how have you thought about just the risk of, maybe it's early, like it's really early for the consumers and in that side of it?
It's a very good point, and something we definitely thought of it. And I think that the one option is the positioning of, like, hey, this is internal private podcasting for companies, but that's just like a really small audience that, like, doesn't come to the homepage very often. We have been talking to a lot of our customers, and a lot of them want to make money from their podcast. Making money through private podcasting is one way. We're kind of generalizing it to say, like, make money from your podcast, because, like, our Stripe integration can tie into private podcasting, but it doesn't have to. It can act like a tip jar, right? So you can just say, hey, I have a fucking product over here that's $10. You can pay me $10 right from my Castus website. And so, yeah, I mean, we are generalizing it to make money as a podcaster, not make money through private podcasting, even though I think that is the most, for the listener, like, the highest value. But you can just make money and have a form on your site that we give you that lets people pay you money.
And without going too deep into the plans this early in it, like, how much of the shift will depend on your ability to educate the how? Because obviously, private podcasting is going to play a role, but in something like in any of the, not that this is like the make money online kind of infomarkety thing, but in anything that is like that, it attracts a lot of aspirational people, which is fine. But if they come to you without an audience, they're going to be looking for, how do we grow the audience? Like, how do we do that? And so I know you guys have a lot of educational content already, but how are you thinking about tying all that in to help them on their journey? Because they got to be at a certain spot before the private podcast even is feasible.
Yeah. It's funny because in this respect, like, you know, the joke with product is like, oh, that's not a bug, it's a feature. Like, this is a small audience is not a problem. It's actually an asset to make money through direct listener contribution versus ads, right? Because, like, the math on ads is like you get $23 per 1,000 listens. Right. And so, Andy, on this show, we'd make about $50 a month. Right. And it's just crazy. Right. Like, and the vast, vast, vast majority of people can't make any money through ads. Right. Unless they're selling themselves and you go to businesses and you're doing all this stuff. But nobody wants to do that. Right. People just want to, like, podcast and put up a thing to where they can make money. And, like, it's a much easier barrier to say, like, hey, you can make $1,000 if you get 100 people to pay you $10. You know, like, to get 100 people to pay you $10 is much easier than to get $1,000 via ads. And so it's even like a talking point to our, if you want to make money as a podcaster, ads is 100% not the way to do it. Some way for your listeners to pay you is the way to do it. And we'll show you how to do that. Obviously, like, to your point, like, educating on the value of private podcasting and listener contributions and things like that is a lot of what we have to do now. It just is aligned with, this is a much better mousetrap than, like, ads.
Yeah. Taking that stand makes everything else easier in the sense of your messaging is all aligned around that idea. And for us, I mean, what we make is called a lineup optimizer. We also have the projections of power and this and that, the database and simulations, and go down the rabbit hole there. But ours works significantly different than what we call traditional optimizers. And so we talk a lot about this, the inherent flaws based in those tools, and then really position ourselves against that. And so I think it's taking that stand is important. And where we're evolving our thoughts are just like, how do you onboard them onto that? Because part of it, I always hate using this word, but it's accurate is like you, if you're going to take that more like opinionated stance, you need to indoctrinate them into your view. But once they, if you can back up what you're saying, once they believe the message, you are the only real choice for them because you've built the product to solve that specific thing and no one else has. And so that's the first hump, in my opinion, to get them over. But then you got to like help them like achieve that dream. And that's where like the stage we're at right now is when, as we're rethinking, not really onboarding, but I guess support and really just how people can help themselves and how do we present, what order do we present things to them? How much do we share right away? All that sort of thing. And where we're at is saying, okay, we're going to create a lot of content, but we don't want to overwhelm them with these 40-minute long videos or these like advanced concepts when they don't even know how to build their first lineup. So it's like, get them to do that first thing and then educate them so that the process evolves over time to eventually get where they want to go, but like let them feel progress. But the biggest thing is just not complicating it up front, not making them feel as though they need to do these 50 steps just to have any chance. It's like, get them that result quick, even if it's not pretty. And then like, all right, now we'll go back and figure out how we can improve this. And then like, oh, what about once you're there, then look into this. And I think that it's not easy, but I think when you can get that right, that's when it's very powerful. Because again, like if they really believe that message, if it's more than just marketing and your product does support it, no one else is going to do that. So I think that's how you can, it can build a real community too.
Yeah. And I think that like your point about like onboarding and indoctrination, I'll say education maybe, is I think the order of operations there, like I think a lot of us say like, we're only going to make this marketing and positioning move when, quote, the product is ready and when the onboarding is ready and when the education is ready. And those things are never going to be ready, you know? And so like, to me, I want to put the flag in the ground now and the product does it. The product is never going to be done. It's never going to be perfect. The education is never going to be as good as we want it, but like it does what we say it does. And like, to me, it's worth taking the stance now because it's going to take years to really let this sink in with a lot of folks. And like over that time, education and onboarding and culture and all of this can continue to evolve and like be refined. But yeah, we're making the decision to change things early, I think is fair to say, just because like I feel so strongly that this is like the future of the company.
Yeah. And it's the risk of trying to catch the wave early, but when it works, I mean, it's great. And again, I feel like you're finding ways to test the waters without betting the company on it. You're moving the company in that direction. And I think it's where if the wave comes in the way you think it is, it'll really pay off. But even if it doesn't, you're building a great business along the way.
Yeah, these are not irreversible changes.
Well, I'm excited to hear how it all is shaken out in I know it's not going to be like an overnight thing, but in the coming months, just seeing how you find that position, the positioning and how everything else works out. And hopefully I can be a little less ranty in the upcoming weeks. But either way, it was fun catching up and I appreciate everyone listening.
Thanks, everyone.